Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we're having a conversation about something that is very important. We've had, I think this is a series now, because it's become such a huge thing in my practice, in my life, that I want people to understand the power and, you know, the things that happen to us when our bodies are exposed to EMF, and we are getting bombarded with 5G commercials and how it's the next latest and greatest thing. But again, I think we need to know you don't know what you don't know, and you cannot make conscious decisions about your health unless you actually have information. So today we're going to speak with Mr. Nick Pinot. He is has a website called The EMF Guy, and he's somebody who can speak to this and let us think about more than 5G, because it's what we're being focused on. But as he's going to tell us, it's a bigger picture than that. And I think in this day and age, you only have your health, and you need to make sure that you do everything in your power to protect that. So, Mr. Pinot, thank you so much for coming on. I really am looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks for having me. I'm very glad that you're featuring this topic. It's definitely a topic that more people should be discussing about.
I think so. We only hear the sexy parts about it. How it's going to be faster,
yeah,
and our life won't be the same unless we have it, and we're not cool. But, you know, this is something that you've really taken to, and your website is an information fest, quite frankly. How did you come to learn about EMF and the problems?
You know, I stand on the shoulder of giants, scientists and medical doctors who have unveiled these health effects, this link between electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic pollution and human health. And I have a background in copywriting and an interest in journalism overall. And I started more than 12 years ago now writing about nutrition, weight loss, and I was interested in bettering my own health and the health of my family at the time. And 5 years ago, I came across several books that really inspired me around this very topic of electromagnetic fields. One of them was from the late Martin Blank from the Columbia University. He's a PhD and has a background in biology and physics. And he was very, very clear in his book, Overpowered, that this technology can and will harm us, especially when we're exposed 24/7 the way that most people are. Mm-hmm. It really shocked me at the time because it was so far from my current understanding and what I kept hearing from even, you know, cancer societies and for sure Health Canada here in Canada said there's no impact. The FCC, the Federal Communication Commissions in the States, said there's no impact whatsoever. In fact, they say literally you could be exposed 24/7, even children, and there would be no impact, which is so far from the reality that we're seeing in scientific research. And it was really that shock that that pulled me really out of my nutrition passion and right into a EMF passion of all things. I did not expect to end up there, but 5 years later, I've been publishing full-time, published a book, I'm doing courses, and I'm trying to get the word out to the public and also to medical doctors the best way I can.
Well, you mentioned the last group that you're trying to reach out to, and are we the most stubborn? Because I think most doctors don't know anything about the effects of EMF. And this is a learning curve for me as well. I had no idea the clinical findings that could arise from EMF. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and I'm seeing people with headaches and ringing in the ear, hearing loss and dizziness. But that's just my field. I mean, I'm also learning that things like depression and ADHD and other clinical conditions that everybody seems to have all of a sudden, and then they're just treating the symptom with medication, and no one's looking under the hood. Are doctors now waking up to this?
You know, there's been a major conference with hundreds now of medical doctors and also health practitioners of other specialties, even including nutritionists or health coaches, that have participated in the EMF Medical Conference 2021. It's the second of its kind, and it really shows that, well, I wouldn't say that all doctors are waking up to this, but at least several thousands of them now across the world. There are several organizations like MD for Safe Tech, so Physicians for Safe Technology, that are led by physicians who not only understand EMF, but also understand the conditions that can be triggered by EMFs, including condition called electrohypersensitivity. You know, that's been recognized since the 90s in Sweden, officially at a governmental level. And that's also recognized under the American Disability Act in the U.S., as a real condition and not something that's psychosomatic or psychological, but something that's quite physical. And we could equate it as an oversensitivity or even allergy to wireless signals and other types of EMFs, to be quite honest.
Now, when you say that there's a sensitivity, I mean, I'm sure it presents along so many different systems. What's the most common thing? Because I think it's subtle and it gets confused for other things. But what people, let's say for a parent, for example, and you know, these kids are loaded down with cell phones and video games, et cetera. Is there a symptom that parents should be looking for?
You know, the most telling symptoms are a bit more extreme in their nature, but they represent maybe, I would say, 3 to 5% of individuals, those who are the real hypersensitive. And those would normally, a lot of these patients have already put two and two together and realized, for example, if they talk on the phone, they would get a migraine automatically. They stop using the phone, no migraine. So then they say, well, looks like I'm allergic to my phone, right? Other people could go by a tower and quite literally have heart palpitations or heart symptoms being close to a Wi-Fi router or a computer or even a cell phone tower. So these are more extreme examples. But the problem is that for the remaining of the population, and Dr. Magda Havas from Trent University in Canada says there's around a third of the entire population that has mild to moderate symptoms of electrohypersensitivity. But these symptoms would be difficult to pinpoint on EMFs or on cell phones or on Wi-Fi or Bluetooth devices. For example, you would have increase in depression symptoms or anxiety, insomnia or poor sleep and fatigue. So that's about the top four symptoms that everyone has almost every day, right?
Exactly.
We all have a little bit of that. But through the process of elimination of that agent, when you turn off your phone at night, you turn off the Wi-Fi, maybe you start speaking a little bit less on the phone, or maybe you speak with a distance. So you use the a wired headset or use a speakerphone option. Well, now you might realize that your health changes for the better. And that's what happens for a lot of medical doctors who want to convince their patients that this is a real issue. They have them follow simple protocols like these, like this. For example, just getting the devices out of the bedroom, right, turning up the Wi-Fi at night, and as many of these wireless devices as possible. And most people realize after a few nights that they recover more quickly and they feel better. So after that, it becomes real for them.
Well, I've been counseling my patients to do that as well now that I'm aware, and I did it for myself. I can say personally, I'm sleeping so much better. And I noticed the first time I unplugged and I got one of those timers so that my whole router goes off, my house got quiet. The first time it went up, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not hearing nothing. You know, it feels like you're in the country. And that was the wake up call for me. And I definitely wake up more refreshed. I feel more relaxed. You know, it's when you think about it, there's no reason to have this on 24/7, sleeping by your head and just blasting yourself. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Nick Pinnell, and he has a website, theemfguy.com. People need to go there because he has blogs, he has things that you can download, and he also has courses that you can take. So this is about educating yourself, not just being told. I mean, I think one of the things I really love about your website is that it it treats people like adults, right? So you can learn, you can become a student about something, do your due diligence, and actually make changes. I find that when I tell people what to do, they don't always do it. But if you explain why it's important, then they make changes. And I love the fact that you're spending so much time and effort to really be more like a teacher about it, like more than a one-stop shop. So thank you for everything about that. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's important to empower people to take their own decisions. My message is not one of extremism where I say, you know, you should shred your phone to pieces. Most people would tune out at that point. And, you know, if you tell people just a very similar topic is food toxins. If you tell people, you know, my philosophy is that you should never eat a single bite of food containing pesticides, you'd be hard pressed to find anything these days with no glyphosate, right? It's on rainwater. It's even found in trace amounts in organic foods. Mm-hmm. So it's ubiquitous. And just like electro pollution is ubiquitous and is difficult to completely eliminate. However, the good news about that entire topic and why I think I stuck to it through the years is that most of these action steps are free. You don't have to purchase organic food or change your food budget or learn how to cook. And these steps are important, but they are tedious. They are complicated. Turning off the Wi-Fi at night takes half a second. So these steps are very easy to do. And they just follow a principle that already exists for nuclear radiation, which is the ELARA principle, which stands for as low as reasonably achievable. So how low can you go inside your home, right? Well, mm-hmm. if you turn off the devices when you don't use them, you'll have a way lower exposure compared to people who don't. So right there, you have a lot of opportunity to minimize the impact that this radiation has on your overall health.
Well, those are really straightforward things. And for people who want to go a little to the next level, I've, you know, looked at some not gadgets per se, but things you can do to lower it further. I did a timer on my router. But are there things that you can use to cover the router or cover your windows that would also block? Because I think your home should be your sanctuary. You can't control what's going on outside of it. But if you can control that, that's a majority of your time, isn't it?
Yeah, you can. And, you know, the simple version of mitigation and turning off these EMFs is really taking control of what you can control. There's also steps where you can go a little bit further, hire an EMF mitigation specialist or a building biologist. And these are home inspectors, if you will, that have EMF meters and special engineer level equipment and who can take levels of these EMFs inside your bedroom, especially because that's the most important place you should aim to lower your exposure, but also throughout your entire home and your kid's bedroom, for example. And there's more and more people, who, especially those that are hypersensitive, if you will, that start shielding their bedroom. Mm-hmm. That you can have a bed canopy over your bed, or you can even paint the walls with special EMF repelling paint. And it all sounds a little bit extreme in its nature, but the reality is, I think we're responding to this artificial environment with equally artificial and complicated solutions. So for some people, it's the only way they can live in a city because when they sleep in a sleep sanctuary like this, whether it's a bed canopy that is made out of special materials that repel the external Wi-Fi or cellular network signals, they start recovering. And when they don't, they have a hard time living in a city and also be healthy at the same time. So it's quite difficult for them. It's akin to being a celiac person, but you live in a city where it's mostly bread that you can eat. Oh, wait, it's already what's the case in society. You just have a very hard time eating and not being triggered by this allergen, right? So it's the same idea. People who are quite sensitive, they need to take extra steps. And you find them normally in the countryside because by intuition, they start getting away from all that electro pollution and noise a little bit by default.
Well, actually, I have a corollary to that, to statements that you made. Is everybody, if they get exposed to enough and a higher amount of radiation, can anybody become electrosensitive based on their exposure?
It's quite possible. There's people who seem to unfortunately enter this planet with a predisposition to become sensitive. And there are certain genetic predispositions that have been identified. And then a lot of it is, I think, based on their health status. It looks like people who already have chronic disease, already have developed sensitivities to foods or even to chemicals, are more prone to develop this electro hypersensitivity. There seemed to be almost a point of no return. And a lot of doctors, especially a part of this EMF medical conference I told you about, I watched pretty much the entire thing. And several of the doctors say that the good news is even the most sensitive cases can recover, but it's a very, very long road to recovery. And then it's not like they can go back to using their phone all the time in a reckless manner. Normally, they stay quite sensitive, but they're at least able to cope and, for example, live in a city or spend several days in a city to visit their relatives. So we don't know exactly why is it that certain people become so sensitive, but oftentimes these people have already other health issues and inflammatory conditions. So it's this stress bucket theory. If your bucket is already right about to spill and you add EMFs on top and then it spills and these are the symptoms you feel. Whereas if someone is very resilient, has a good health status, maybe they're going to add EMFs and not even feel a single thing.
That's a good point. And so I want to take the question backward. Those folks who have been, you know, reached a toxic level and their quality of life has changed, do you recommend that they also do the opposite of what you just described? Clean up your diet. Like, let's say I understand mold and EMF basically feed on each other. Do you have to now change your diet so you're less acidic, that you take things that are cross reactors from an allergy standpoint to mold and literally help your cellular level just as much as the outside?
Yes, you're thinking about this correctly. And functional medicine doctors that are treating electro hypersensitive have all sorts of approach. A lot of it comes down to ensuring they have proper nutritional status. Oftentimes, these people have very low mineral levels. They might have high heavy metals levels, so other toxicities that are inside their body that might be needed to detox. And it's really not a one size fits all, but usually it's really the functional medicine approach where you look at all the aspects of health, including nutrition and, of course, calming down your brain, because when you're in that case of electro hypersensitivity, you're always stressed about the next exposure. So calming down your brain, meditation or other practices like these oftentimes seem to help very much.
So biofeedback, it sounds like, as well. And I mean, it's, well, let's go to the fact that the body's a battery. And if you're vibrating at a higher level frequency because of how you connect with yourself and environment, that seems to be something that makes it less toxic, right?
Yeah, definitely. And brain retraining is also part of the recovery. And normally, it's an essential part of recovery from what I heard from these physicians that treat electro hypersensitives. One program that's been recommended is the Gupta program. I think he's from the UK, but it's a lot of brain retraining, because it looks like these people have become extremely reactive to even, you know, the sight of a Wi-Fi router could make them panic almost. And that's normal because they are harmed. They feel like they are harmed by this technology. And they are, since their reaction is so huge compared to the average person. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult for them to calm down and put things in perspective and retrain their brain and also heal their body. So usually it's a multi-systemic approach that can do the trick.
It's something it seems that we're on our own about. If the telecom industry is just pushing for the next generation, and I'm already hearing before 5G is fully implemented, there's a 6G. How can it doesn't?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't even know, or we do know, but they don't seem to care, that studies have shown that from as early as 2G, that this signal, this Wi-Fi pollution is toxic to the body and can cause cancer. And it just seems like it's just nobody's paying attention to that one important piece. Is there any advocacy to try to educate the government, the bodies that should be looking, overseeing this, and from a patient safety perspective, doing something?
There's a lot of amazing groups like Children's Health Defense, led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I had the immense privilege to interview Bobby Kennedy just a few weeks back, and he told me that the FCC in the United States, the Federal Communication Commission, is a textbook example of what it is to have regulatory capture. So in other words, the wolf is really guarding the hen house, but the hen house is full of wolves. the industry is the FCC, in other words. So they have appointed people from the industry or the lobbying group, CTIA, at the FCC, and vice versa. So they go to the industry. There's that revolving door we've seen with Monsanto and environmental groups. So our EPA, for example, Environmental Regulatory Agencies, I must say. So the problem is that at the moment, it looks like we're going to have to fight to make our government, to force our government to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. In Canada, we'll need to sue Health Canada. And the FCC has lost in court against Children's Health Defense and the Environmental Health Trust, two amazing nonprofits, just a few weeks ago. So it's been, they've been slapped on the wrist at least, and now they will have to explain why they decided not to review their 1996 EMF guidelines that are clearly deprecated based on exposure to one cell phone for a few minutes, when in reality, most people use their phone all day, every day, and they don't use one machine, they use 20 of them sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the FCC is very, very keen to keeping the rules, the EMF, the amount of EMF that is allowed in the population very, very high, because it's good for business. But, you know, the levels of EMFs that are allowed in the U.S. are among are the highest on the planet at the moment. So several other countries have orders of magnitude lower limits, including Italy, for example, even China, even India, and Russia. Most other countries have lower limits. It's just Canada that's good second with very high limits as well. So I'm very displeased with my government as well. But things will move when, unfortunately, I think that they will take the legal route to get things moving. And it's already the case, and it's moving fast at the moment.
Well, I hope it can't move fast enough to make some changes. So it really does, to me, come down to people. And I want to discuss that, because it doesn't work without us. If we stop buying it, if we stop falling into the trap of coolness, maybe this would also be able to be put a brake on it. So let's talk about that when we come back. You're living in the solution.
If you miss Living in Solution, you can catch it on drelainagegeorge.com, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and a host of multimedia platforms. You can follow her on Positive Solutions on Telegram and Living in Solution on Facebook. Subscribe and share it with your friends.
Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Nick Pinot, and you should go to his website, theemfguy.com. There's also a podcast, Smarter Tech Podcast, and he talks about a lot of different things in more detail. And I think people would learn a lot by just listening to what's out there. Now, before the break, you did a wonderful job of explaining from the governmental side and the regulatory side, but really, doesn't it come down to the consumer? Everything seems to come down to us. And I think we have given our power away to people who tell us that they care about us and they have our best interests at heart. How do we educate people to take their power back and their health back and disengage from this technology?
It is difficult. You know, the many people in Silicon Valley that have come out in the last years, in the last 10 years, many engineers, the originators of the iPhone, for example, said that they regret their invention. Why do they say that? It's kind of crazy when you think about it. It's such a marvelous machine. I have one. I have an iPhone 7 in front of me as I'm recording this. And my God, it's a marvelous invention, kind of replaces 150 machines. However, it's been designed in a way that's very, very addictive and distracting, and designed with the selling new stuff in mind, and not certainly not human health. So the problem, I think, comes down to recognizing that this technology was built to keep us addicted, and we have to take control, if only because of the distraction aspect to it. You have entire families that are just staring at their phone and not even talking to each other. You know, it's a societal malaise that unfortunately has developed. I think many people are coming to their senses, but it's difficult. You're fighting against something that might be just as powerful as sugar and nicotine. So phone addiction is a big problem, and you have the EMS, but you have other aspects to it that makes it very, very compelling to want to use it all day, every day. And if only we changed our phones a little bit less frequently, right? If we use our phone less frequently as well, and prefer talking on a computer through Skype or Zoom and other programs while on a hardwired connection, then the cell phone companies would see that users use their phone a little bit less. We're influencing the market in that way. The reason that 5G, that fifth generation of wireless signal, is being rolled out is mainly because people want to stream 4K video on social media and on YouTube, and they want to stream music and video clips. And so it's all about streaming videos. So if we did a little bit less of that, then it would send a message to the industry. You know, streaming a video is a very EMF intensive activity. There's almost nothing that can send more EMFs towards your body than that, because it takes a lot of data. But nowadays we're moving towards unlimited data plan. You know, this is a popular thing. So if people don't change their habits and prefer watching offline content. So for example, you can pre-download your music, even on Spotify and these apps, you can pre-download your music and store it locally on your device. You can pre-download podcasts. You can pre-download radio shows such as this one in many situations. So after that, you can just use your device while it's offline, and you have less distraction and you have less EMF. And you also send a message to the industry, because when users continue buying new phones and new things, they're going to come up with new technologies. And unfortunately, at the moment, because the industry is so powerful in let's say, quieting our regulators or controlling them, then, you know, 6G, as you mentioned, is right around the corner. The engineers have been looking at it since 2018, if I recall correctly, I think it was a meeting in Europe. And they're just looking at the next thing. It's a big business opportunity. So they're going to create new technologies that are going to be cool and convenient. But at the moment, they're still not forced to make these things healthy. And I think at one point they will. But in the meantime, we have to recognize that these machines are both very cool, very convenient. Some aspects are very good for our lives, such as the connectivity and finding our ways and many tools that are on that phone and these machines. However, there's a lot of detriment to our lives if we don't control how we use them. So once we recognize that, I think we're going to at least have an honest discourse. And if more consumers say, you know, I fear my phone, or I hate my phone, I have this love-hate relationship with my phone, well, new companies are going to emerge with safer phones. Mm-hmm. And that's already the case. There's a Polish startup called Mudita, M-U-D-I-T-A, and they are a tech startup, about 30, 35 employees from Europe that work on a safer phone. And it's a phone that is very basic. It's not a smartphone. It's kind of a dumb phone, if you will. So you have a display that doesn't look that good. It's very simple. And many people are excited to buy that. They want to go back to a technology that is less distracting and more practical. And then maybe you don't feel like being on your phone all day, because it isn't so cool anyway. Uh-huh. So you don't have to spend as much time. And it's also a phone that argues will be the lowest EMF phone on the planet. So it's moving. I think that consumer demand is starting to emerge. And if we all did a little bit less, if we participated a little bit less in that consumerism around tech, I think that the industry would be changed to force would be forced to change its ways, because they're really relying on you changing your phone every year to make profit. If you stop doing that, then, well, some companies are going to struggle, and they're going to have to find other reasons for you to purchase a phone. And maybe it will have to do with health or with the quality also, and we won't have to throw these in the trash every other year and fill up the planet with toxic waste. You know, there's many reasons we need to change our ways around tech in reality.
I think you're right. I mean, we can do it with the consumer, can do it with a carrot and the stick. You know, they depend on us. If we don't fall into the trap, then we're like, we're actually, I agree with you in everything, right? So the big box stores and the monolithic, huge corporate driven everything would actually not survive if people went back to individualized, local, you know, your neighbor, and you deal with who you know instead of some faceless entity, because they seem to think that they're invincible and they don't have our, I mean, there's a pattern here, isn't there? They don't have our best interest at heart. It's about how much money they can make on the backs of whomever and what. You know, that's kind of their attitude. You have nowhere to go, so you're just going to do it. Just take it and like it. And we just need to make that one step. We don't like it. We're not taking it. We're withdrawing our consent. That seems to get everybody's attention when people do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The best way you can do, I think you can move a corporation in the direction that you want it to, you want to steer it, is by hurting the bottom line. Mm-hmm. If Verizon loses, I don't know, 5% at Wall Street in 2 days, they're going to freak out. It's just how it works. These people just have big meetings and they say, my God, what is happening? Well, maybe people are starting to boycott your company for XYZ reason. Maybe people don't like the 5G rollout and say, you know what, I'm not going to partake in this technology. So now I'm going to keep my phone for 2 more years. If only consumers decided this year they're not going to change their phone. It's fast enough. It's good enough. I'm not going to buy a new 5G phone, a new exciting, even if the company says, it's free, right? It's always free. Like these phones cost $2,000, but they say, oh no, it's free. It's free. It's all built into your monthly payment. So it's tempting to do that because it's well done. The marketing is well done. Those machines are beautiful. The new phones are powerful. I mean, I'm not selling it. Yeah, it's difficult to do the opposite, just like it's difficult to not eat junk food all the time because there's so many fast food joints that are just shooting advertisements your way with, I guess, sexy food. I don't find it sexy anymore because I've been eating healthy for 12 years. But, you know, most people would say, that looks good, that burger, I want it. But at the same time, you know that it's not good for you. So we have to resist a little bit these temptation and this convenience to try to steer the world and society towards where we want it to go. And yes, we do have an individual responsibility in, I think, not necessarily buying a phone or not buying a phone. Most people will, and I understand that it's most adults, but probably 95% of the population have at least a dumb phone, if not a smartphone. But it comes down to how you use it. So if you choose to use it less and don't use your data, even if you have 100 gigs of data per month, you don't have to use all of them. You can barely use it and prefer to use your computer instead, for example, and just barely use your phone. And if cell phone companies see that, they're going to have to change the game a little bit.
I agree. We need to be the power behind their movement instead of being victimized by their advertising.
Yeah.
And it's a choice, and it's different because I think most people are saturated with ads and bells and whistles. And, you know, from a standpoint of a legal standpoint, they know what they're doing. They can't say that we didn't, it would just happen. People just got addicted to their phones. I've heard people talk about how the way they have the pings on when you get an email and all those things are designed to almost like a Pavlov response, have the person basically grab their phone and start using it.
Yeah.
And that's willful. That's a known thing. You should be held accountable. And I know we're going to take a break in a couple of seconds, but where's the liability? If you know that you created something that someone's going to become addicted to that inherently is toxic, the more you use it, the more you're inclined to get sick from it. And there are studies and there are all sorts of things that have been, it's no longer questionable, I don't think. How do you get away with that? And I'll let you answer that question when we return, because kind of a provocative question. So we'll answer that when we come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Pinot. And before the break, I asked a provocative question. You know, if you're doing something that's, it's legal from a, I guess, a legal standpoint, but ethically and morally, it's not. Is there any liability for this? And can people actually bring suit saying that, hey, you knew this was toxic, you basically baited us into it, and you continue to do so, and now there's a consequence? Is that something that people can do?
Yeah, well, there's 50 lawsuits at the moment that I think it's the Washington Court of Appeals or Washington Circuit, sorry. Julian Gresser is an international attorney that I've been speaking to in those last few months, and he's involved in many of these cases. And there's 50 just in Washington. So around the world, it must be in the hundreds, if not in the thousands, of lawsuits against cell phone companies, against brain tumors or other types of sometimes deadly damages that have happened. And in Italy, there's two or three cases that have been won in Supreme Court where the telecoms have been recognized guilty of not informing consumers how to use the cell phone safely. Even the Italian government has been sued in court and lost, and now was forced by its own Supreme Court to inform its citizens how to use cell phones more safely, which is simple in the end. You don't keep it in the pocket all day. You hit that airplane mode button when it's in your pocket to not hurt your fertility or cause a tumor. For example, a lot of women put it in their sports bra, which is a very bad idea. You hit airplane mode at night to protect your sleep quality, and then you use it sparingly with distance. So it's very easy, but it took citizens suing their own government for the government to be forced to launch a simple informational campaign, right? So it doesn't make sense. It's really, really angers me. And I think the same will happen eventually in the U.S. So at the moment, what's been happening is that a major U.S. study, the National Toxicology Program study, the NTP, in 2018 released its results around the big question behind that was originally mandated by the FDA to the NTP was, are cell phones carcinogenic or not? Very simple. And their hypothesis is they're not, right? So they found the opposite, unfortunately. 20 years later in 2018, after much politics involved and a lot of delays, now they found the answer. It's a definite carcinogen, according to the NTP. And there was a three-day peer-reviewed process. So this is not just a handful of scientists. It's scientists, engineers, even people from the industry that have been invited on that committee. And they concluded that the evidence was very, very conclusive, was definitive that this is a carcinogen. And you know what happened after that?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
So nothing happened. So at the moment, the FDA that originally mandated that study, because the FDA got told at the end of the 90s, you need to study this. The FCC didn't want to do it. The FDA, which is the Food and Drug Administration, is supposed to regulate consumer products. So they said, oh, well, maybe it's our responsibility to, since cell phones are consumer products. But but they don't have the expertise in-house. So they ask the NTP to do that study. And 20 years later, they say, well, these results don't apply to humans. And this was a very very large rat and mice study, which is the golden standard of studying carcinogen. If it causes cancer in rats and mice, nearly 100% of the time it does cause cancer in humans too. So that's a good model to use. But they swept it under the rug. So at the moment, I was speaking with that attorney, Julian Gresser, and he's saying that they're starting to plan to sue the FDA on top of the FCC now, because the FDA has done nothing with these results. And what they should be doing is like the Italians, not necessarily saying, oh my God, well, we have a carcinogenic product, we have to stop selling phones. It won't work with mm-hmm. the American people. Everyone mm-hmm. needs a phone these days. The economy is pretty much built around that speed, and that's fine. But we need to be informed how to use them in a safer way. And also, companies in the long run need to put stricter and stricter regulations on how much these phones emit. They could shield users better, for example. There's a lot of technologies that exist, even patents from the 80s that are possessed by Nokia and Ericsson, the first few cell phone companies from Finland and Sweden. They have these patents that have been sitting on shelves for 40 years about shielding the antenna and protecting the user. And the reason they're not used is, well, it's going to cost more money and no one is asking us to do it. So it's going to move forward. These lawsuits are going to move forward. And you ask about liability. Well, at the moment, the cell phone industry has been quite protected by the 1996 Telecom Act that was signed by Clinton in 1996, of course. And it states that people cannot really oppose the installation of cell towers, for example, over health effects. So they might say, well, I don't want this tower in my neighborhood because it's not pretty. But they cannot say because it's harming my health. So it's not necessarily protecting them 100%. But the reality is that they really got protected, legally speaking, by having these laws. So at the moment, there's other attorneys that are looking to have these old laws revoked for an industry that has been protected now for 30 years. And of course, these industries are very, very powerful. They have the money to do the payouts. So at the moment, since the early 2000s, no telecom company on the planet is insured for damage, because the first two insurance or the reinsurance companies, like Swiss Re, for example, and Lloyd's of London, the top two on the planet, have said at the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, they said, we will not insure a single telecom company because you guys are unsolvable. It's impossible. It's not a question of if there will be lawsuits and health effects. It's a question of when. And they want nothing to have to do with it. Mm-hmm. And this is really what I learned from Professor Holly Owenson from Sweden. And he was in these meetings in the early 2000s and spoke with presidents of these companies. And they were laughing really about it. They said, oh my God, the telecom industry, they're going to get hammered with lawsuits in 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it's coming. And we're seeing the number of lawsuits really going up. And what people should do and can do nowadays is encouraging financially or through volunteering these organizations, such as Children's Health Defense, Environmental Health Trust, there's grassroots environmental. There's a lot of grassroots organization, just like the big fight against Monsanto and other giants. It takes a village. So a lot of activists are now coming together with scientists, with attorneys, and are trying to move things forward. And this is honestly the only way that someone's going to look out for us is if we look after ourselves, really. So the good news is it's moving forward, but it's going to take a lot of effort for it to for us to win.
Well, that's at least it's gotten started, because I think it's been mentioned but totally swept under the rug for so long. And it really cracks me up that they're saying it'll cost too much if we do these safety changes, it's already over $1,000 for these phones. I mean, it's like almost 2,000 in some of the instances, and people are going out there and buying it. So that's really
And they make trillions. Yeah. They make trillions. It's the most profitable industry on the planet. But let's not forget that. So it's really a bad excuse. In the end, they want to squeeze every dollar possible. You know, it's very unreasonable. And I don't know. To me, these corporations are very, very reckless in how they operate. And they're going to get sued for it.
But in the meantime, we can hasten the process of them slowing this tech down and watching our own backs, like we said at the beginning of the show. But I just want to delve a bit into 5G. Just for the listeners, what is so great about 5G from their perspective? It's like 5% faster than 4G, technically, right? It's not like it's huge. I mean, how fast do you need something to go? Who does it benefit?
You know, 5G, the promise of 5G is really a lot of speed and it's a lot of hype. There's been billions invested in 5G. It's probably in the tens of billions around the world. So there's a lot of industry hype around 5G being so much faster. In reality, most of 5G that is rolled out at the moment is essentially the same thing as 4G, except it says 5G. It's a little bit faster. There's new ways of tampering with the signal that make it connect better. For most people, it's not what they want. They think that 4G is perfectly fine the way it is. And they don't initially, if they knew that it comes with more radiation and a million more towers very close to people's home, which is, again, that's the opposite of where we should be going based on the data. It's a class 2B carcinogen. It's the NTP study came out in 2018. There's hundreds of international scientists sounding the alarm. And what we're doing is adding more of a bad thing. So it's crazy. It's like saying that, now that we know that we're destroying the environment, we will add 1,000 new power plants that are spewing black smoke everywhere. It makes no sense. So this is exactly the wrong move to roll out 5G. And to roll out 6G and so forth. And we need the opposite of that. We need to roll it in, I guess. I don't know, reduce the level. We're starting to reduce how much pollution is emitted by certain factories, we need to reduce electro pollution as a whole. So to me, 5G is very simple. It's more of a bad thing. That's it. So if we have already determined, the NTP study was studying these rats, you know, on what technology they were exposed. These rats on the NTP study that found it's a clear carcinogen, this was 2G and 3G. Well, almost no one uses 3G, yet alone 2G these days. So it means that we're studying old technologies and saying, well, that technology was harmful. Well, we have no reason to believe that 4G is any safer. In fact, it is probably much more harmful. And so is 5G, because each time we have better connectivity, there's cost to it. There's more pulsation. There's even more chaos in these signals. And on a biological standpoint, biologists know that this is what causes the health impact. So when we add 5G on top of everything else, we're just asking for trouble.
Well, on that note, it gives us a lot to think about and a lot to make decisions about. I don't think anybody can say, I don't know anymore. You have to make a decision. And I think you need to choose yourself. Now, in the seconds that we have left, how can people reach you?
Sure. Just go to theemfguy.com. They're going to find my book. They're going to find that we have educational courses about how to minimize EMFs at home, and also education for health professionals. And also on a few social media, you're going to all find them on theemfguy.com.
I want to thank you so much for joining me, Mr. Pinnell. It was an absolute pleasure. And I think everybody now has some homework to do so that they can stop depending on someone to care about them, because it's really coming down to the individual at this point. So thank you so much for everything you do. I can't wait to learn anything else that you have coming down the pipe. You're always welcome to come back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.